Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios. I'm in Etta, Mississippi. Some people don't know where Etta, Mississippi is. And joining me on the other end of the line for part two, hey, I surprised you with that name last week, didn't I, Brennan?
You did.
No idea that I was going to name it Driven.
Nope. And that was, I thought that went well with the storyline and everything. I was pretty happy that you chose that. So, it definitely goes good with the story, I'd like to say.
Man, I'm going to tell you, Ramsey has used that word to describe you. I text Shelby and I said, Shelby, do you have a nickname that y'all call Brennan around camp, or what would you be a word you would describe him with? And he said, we just call him Brennan. you know, for Shelby to have the humor that he does.
I mean, hell yeah. He probably didn't want to tell you how big of a pain in the butt I am to him, but I'm surprised. He probably just didn't want to hurt my feelings, I guess. But no, yeah, he's pretty humorous. He was just here and I told him I was doing this. He said, I'm going to come in there and mess with Rocky. I said, oh, not tonight. So, they don't really have me a nickname, I guess. So,
Shelby, I'm going to announce it on this podcast, but I'm surprised some people. Shelby's going to start coming on part-time, helping me.
He told me, he said, I guess his headset's coming in next week. So he's like, man, I want to get you on there and kind of get, you know, kind of the humor out of both of us instead of, you know, messing up your story. So that'll be good. That'll be good. He'll be pretty humorous for the podcast. So you definitely did good there.
I was just expecting something really, really smartass from Shelby, and all I got back was Brennan. I guess that was his smart-ass way of responding to me.
I guess. He definitely ain't going to tell you I'm driven. It'll be good. It'll be a good thing on there. And like I said, I don't really have a nickname around the camp. And, you know, they call me Brennan. So, I don't know. I'm kind of, well, I do actually have one, Grumpy, you know, because I have to have my sleep. I'm the first one in bed every night at camp. So, you know, I do get grumpy. I got to have my sleep, and I'm not a morning person, and I have the wrong job for that. But I am grumpy till about 10 a.m., about time the duck and goose hunting's over with. So,
What caffeine do you prefer?
You know what's crazy? Well, I was on that 5-hour energy kick, which was, you know, of course not good for you, but, you know, drinking those every day. But you know what's crazy is, you know, my mom growing up, you know, she every once in a while on Sunday mornings or whatever, she'd have coffee. You know, she'd have a coffee with freaking, you know, French vanilla flavor and all that stuff. And I'd drink it, whatever. But my guide partner, Evan Oswald, he back in December, he's always carrying a thermos to the blind. And, you know, it was cold one morning, and I took a cup, and I just told him I need to warm up. And he gave me some black coffee, nothing in it, nothing. And it was like a light switch. I didn't have a hunt. I mean, I probably hunted 50 more days straight every day, not a day off. And every morning I had my coffee. I made sure and I don't drink it right now. You know, we're turkey hunting right now. And shoot, I'm not drinking coffee in the morning. But if I'm going to duck and do something, I'm gonna have my thermos and my blind. I don't know what the heck happened, but it was a light switch. So, but yep, so probably black coffee.
I didn't know if you were. Shelby was talking about, I can't remember what he called that stuff. Him and Rob joking about it a couple of weeks ago. Some energy drink that Shelby drinks.
Oh, it's Bang.
Bang.
Yep. Bang. Yep. They're pretty good. So, but hey, I got to tease you with something. You were teasing me last week about turkey hunting, and out here in Oklahoma, we're a week and a half or two weekends in the season this weekend, and you were asking about the fan last week, the fan and turkeys, and if they're aggressive. I'm going to tell you when I hung up from recording that next day. I've killed 7 birds this week. Man, we killed a lot of birds this week, but I've killed 7 with that fan this week. They're breaking off the hens, and that fan has been deadly. So, yes, to answer your question last week, the turkey fan is across the board. It's just been very, very helpful this week. So,
are your shooters crawling out behind them, or are you just kind of belly crawling out in the middle of the field and twisting that fan around?
What is it, 10 o'clock here? About 4 hours ago at 6 o'clock, we went out to the field, and 300 acre field, and we drove around, had a big bottom in it, and I had one of my clients in, and we literally crawled probably 150 yards behind a single fan. Now, I'm not talking no plastic junk you buy at the store. I mean, a fan cut off a turkey that's 2 foot wide, and me and him crawled right by. I told him, I said, just stay up against my side. And the whole way, he was, dang near, we had our legs dang near tied together. So, and we got down there, and the daggum 2 birds I've been hunting, I just couldn't get them killed in the last actually 2 years these birds have been in here. And just, if I have hunters in there, they either miss or just they bust me every time. And it's a little bit different hunting timber here. So we finally, this afternoon, crawled out there and got behind that fan and literally, they caught them across the creek, and they jumped across the creek, about 7, I think it was 7 or 8 hens and 2 toms, the 2 that we've been hunting, and got him 20 yards. He come strutting and, just putting on a show and shot him. And I'm telling you, when I say crawling out in the bear pasture, something about that fan just throws him off from everything else, from my belly hanging out from underneath it, and me and him, talking, and, whatever else they can see, that fan definitely throws it off, so.
And those reels are just aggressive.
Oh man, I love it. I'm an aggressive turkey hunter, and it's just been I love hunting them for sure.
Well, before what took me so long to get on the line, a good friend sent me a video and some pictures of his wife and said, my wife killed more turkeys than you have this year.
So talking about you?
Yeah. I've been birthing goats and opening a vet clinic. And
yep.
I actually haven't had time to go hunting very much. I need to come to Oklahoma and whack them and stack them.
Drive on over. You need a half a day. Half a day here.
Didn't Flyway Highway start to whack them and stack them?
I don't know. Welcome to the Flyway. What is he always? The Flyway Highway was the guy with what, the Bradley Smoker and the Pecombus Gas?
Yes! The Bradley Smoker.
That's him. Yeah, that's him. And so we're hunting up here in Saskatoon, don't you know? Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He was something, so.
I think he built a house that was designed to look like a Bradley Smoker.
Nah, I wouldn't put it past him.
Guy was infatuated with that Bradley Smoker.
Bradley Smoker
got every penny out of that sponsorship.
That and Yamaha. Golly, I've never seen somebody on TV. And I ain't going to knock the guy for being safe. Man, it is what it is. But I always thought it funny. He'd be pulling a trailer under the fool. They're going 2 miles an hour, and he's got his helmet and his goggles on. So I don't know if he was accident prone or what, but he was definitely Yamaha and Bradley Smoker. Definitely, like you said, definitely got their sponsorship money out of the deal. But he didn't short them any there.
Hey, have you ever ran across Travis Sight? Travis is up in Kansas, and guys, he was part of the migration report.
Right.
Waterfowl last year.
I know who he is, and I've never met the guy. I think I actually bought some decoys off of him one time or something, but I've never ran across him. I've never met him. Just talked to him a little bit online. We kind of follow each other on social media, so I can't really say I know him.
Travis does the most unbelievable impression of the Flyway Highway guy that I've ever seen.
Oh man, I'm sure I'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, one of these days when I'm really gonna pull, you know, make Travis mad, I'm gonna post that to DuckSide because he made a video a couple of years ago and he sent it to me a few weeks back. This thing is awesome. He sounds just like, what's the guy? I can't even remember the guy's name now. It was the host.
I don't remember. I don't think he's in business anymore. He might be.
All right, so let me tell you a quick story before we jump into your story. I know this isn't about me, but I love sharing old stories. So about 06 or 07, the majority of Primo's videos, the waterfowl videos back then, they were shooting with me over here in Mississippi. And I guess the Flyway Highway guys saw it. I don't know if they saw it on the Outdoor Channel. I don't know if they saw a DVD or what happened. He sent me an email. He said, man, I'd love to bring the Flyway Highway down to Mississippi. I said, sure. I'm never, you know, I'm good with all marketing.
Right. You
know, it's all good for business.
Right.
I sent him an email back and said, hey, what do we need to do? I'll be fine with that.
I'm guessing I need to say this for the people listening. The Flyway Highway was a waterfowl television show. If you didn't know. But, yeah, I think everybody that knows that's watched Duck Hunt on TV definitely knows about it. So did he wind
I'm
up?
I'm telling you, No. Let me tell you this. For those of you that are listening right now, your children, when they become legal age to drink and they're drinking, they're going to replay old episodes of Flyway Highway, and every time that the guy says Bradley Smoker or Yamaha, you got a drink, that's going to be the game.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he's Jesus, that guy wore it out. But, you know, I'm not going to watch the guy. I hope it went well for him. I'm sure he ate good. I don't know if he killed a lot of birds. That's what it was. And another thing, I just thought of, just struck me. He'd be out there and he goes, I'm out with, I don't remember what kind of shotgun he shot, but I'm out, and say it was Benelli. I'm out here with my Benelli with my EOTech. He always had that big old freaking scope on top of it. You remember that? You know what I'm talking about now, don't you? Because I'm telling you, he was all about that EOTech. I got my EOTech on my Bradley Smoker and my Yamaha. Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for the people that's listening to this right now, that, you know, we sound like two of the biggest Flyway Highway fans ever.
Yeah, no. I bet I didn't ever watch a full episode, but, you know, I don't know. I wasn't a fan, really. I just kind of made fun of him, but, and I shouldn't have. I mean, hey, the guy was doing it. He had a TV show, and, you know, he made a living at it, and anybody chasing the dream shouldn't, you know, don't worry about the people, you know, laughing at you, but, God, he was quite the show.
All right, so let me finish this story real quick, and we'll jump into Driven. All right, so for two or three years, Primo's, we had filmed all these DVDs. Incoming is what the Primo series was back then for the DVDs. And let me just lay this out for you. Primo's would actually pay me for the hunts. They would give me no telling how much in free stuff. And, you know, I would go down there hunting at Will's place with them. We just became great friends. It was a great relationship. It was one that benefited both of us. All right, so back to the Flyway Highway. I'm telling you the very big differences in two TV shows. So Flyway Highway sends me an email. I said, hey, yeah, sure, whatever. Be happy to have you. you know, what do we need to do? He sends me an email back. And I can't remember all the details of this. I was going to provide shells, food, which I was fine with. On food, I'm fine with anyway. The big kicker to me is he wanted me to pay him $2,500.
That's odd. Usually the TV shows just want to come up for free for the footage and whatnot.
Yeah.
Huh.
I have to find that old email. I still got it in my Hotmail account. I'm one of 45 users that still use a Hotmail account. But I'll pull it out. I've got it somewhere deep down in there.
Yeah.
Post it up to Duck South.
I tell you what, if you want me to come over there and shoot your ducks, I'll do it for $1,000. So, you know what? I bet you could probably jew me down to about 800, and I would do it. So, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind. If you're wanting to pay somebody to come and promote you and shoot your ducks, yep, I'll do it. So, but anyway.
you're such a cheap date.
Yep. I'm definitely deep. So.
So last week we left the story of Driven. You're making a big decision, huge decision.
Yeah.
You're sitting at your what do you call it? Just regular job.
Well, I tell you, if you didn't listen to the first episode, go back and listen to it before you listen to this, and you can kind of catch on to what happened with the accident. And then you go into the guiding and then getting to where I had the opportunity to buy Canada. And I was where I left off last week, if I remember right, we were talking about when I needed to send the guy the money. About, you know, with that first payment, and the guy was, you know, owner financing it to me for a year, and in which, you know, I didn't have the money to buy the place. And, I had $11,000 in my account. That's all I had. And which, you know, to some it might sound like a lot, and to some it might sound like a little. But at the time it was a lot of money, and for us. And, you know, let me back up. So, the first payment was due, and the guy kept, you know, it was a nice guy, very, very good guy. But he's like, "Hey, man, are you going to do it? You're going to do it?" Because, you know, I just didn't send the money. And, you know, every day, you know, I was down in Texas.
And all your partners had backed out. All your partners had backed out of this deal.
Originally, I was supposed to just go guide up there. And then it went to six of us going to buy in. And then two of them had a DUI. And then, you know, if you have a DUI, you can't get in for, you know, how many ever years. And, so they just all backed out, and that's when I'd already did a bunch of work to get the, you know, find out what we needed. And, you know, I had never been into Canada before. I mean, this is March, April. So, you know, once I talked to the guy and he said he'd do it, it was a deciding factor for me. And, I was down in Texas City, northwest of Galveston. And, I was working nights during the off season, 12-hour nights, and, you know, on the road, and it was right dead April. And I'm going to tell you what, you know, 100% humidity. I was up, working in a reactor. We were getting ready to, we were cleaning some chrome up and stuff to make a weld. And, we're up in this reactor, probably, I don't remember how many stories it was just a huge reactor, but we were way up, and elevator that they, you know, it wasn't a permanent elevator, just something they put up because we were working on a reactor. So it was a, you know, elevator brought you to the top. Well, they also had a staircase. And, so every night, you know, this is all that's on my mind. Hell, I couldn't hardly work. I'm just wondering, you know, should I do this? Should I take the chance of doing it? You know, will it work? And, you know, the whole time my dad's in the ear, you know, do it. You know, you don't want to get 40, 50 and wonder if. You know, what if it was, you know, you'd have did it, would you be somewhere, you know, because, you know, you're young, you know, he kept telling me, you're young, look, if it don't work, you can still fall back to going in the plants, and, you know, you don't want to get older and wonder, you know, pass your, you know, your chance up at your dream job, and, you know, just something you're passionate about. So, you know, every night I'm sitting there thinking about it. Well, I was, I don't know, four or five stories up in this reactor. Well, we were in there grinding. I had Tyvek on, big respirators, freaking hot. I mean, you couldn't imagine how hot it was inside this reactor. Well, if anybody knows anything about a reactor, they have catalysts in there, which is similar. It looks like coke, like a coker unit, black, just black ash almost. I don't know how to explain it. But anyway, so for us to work in there, they have to suck all that catalyst out with a, you know, big vacuum deal. And we're up there and, you know, working and whatnot. They had a truck down below, big old, you know, they looked like a semi with a big tank deal. They sucked the catalyst into the tank. And, you know, I got hot. I mean, it was about 1:45, around that time at night, in the morning, I'm sorry. And I told the guy, I said, look, before we get started, you know, making these welds and all that, I'm just going to walk down and grab some water out of a water jug. And the whole time, my head's not in it. My head is not in work. It's just thinking about Canada, you know, just all the things, you know, will it work? You know, if I buy it, am I going to be able to get enough clients to go and so on. And, so I walked down, Rocky, and I'll never forget it. I walked down and I made the second flight of stairs and I just sit down. I'm like, golly. And, you know, I just sat down and started thinking about it. It was hot and I just said a prayer. I mean, I literally just prayed and, I was just sitting there praying about it. And about that time, I got done. I was just going to get up and walk down. I looked over and I'm about, I don't know, what's two stories, 20 feet, I guess. Yep. So I'm 20 feet up, you know, second flight of stairs, and I look down and I'll never forget it. And the truck that I was talking about long ago that was sucking the catalyst out, I just happened to look and there was a lot, you know, I looked at the license plate and it said Alberta. It was an Alberta truck. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is the one sign of my life that I've never been into Canada. I've never even seen a license plate that said anything Saskatchewan, Alberta, Ontario, none of that. And I looked over and I saw it and I wanted to puke in a good way. I mean, dang near started shaking, hair stand up. I'm like, it was 208. I never believed, because I pulled out my phone, looked at 208, stuck it in my pocket and went to stand up and I just kind of glanced down. And right there, in, you know, under the light plant is this truck, and it says Alberta. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm going to tell you what, I didn't sleep. Go ahead.
So in podcast school, when I went to college to get my degree for podcasting, one of the classes that they teach you is to over-dramatize a moment, or not, to act out a moment when somebody's telling a story. Let me just say this. The first time that I heard this story, I'm sitting there in shock as Brennan's telling me this story. I mean, it's unreal, face-to-face telling the story. When he says this about seeing the cargo container with Alberta on it, that was answer.
That was it. And I'm going to tell you, that was 208. I didn't care about that night. I don't even know how I got through it. And, I remember I didn't sleep. I went, you know, I was sleeping during the day, working at night. I literally went to the house, grabbed a checkbook. Not the house, I'm sorry. I was staying in the hotel. Went to the hotel, got my, you know, little briefcase and pulled out my checkbook and I wrote the check right then. And I sent Derek, I sent him a text. Guy was buying it from and I just said, hey, it's in the mail. Just take it. Just take it from me now. You know what I mean? I will figure out the rest. So, you know, I mailed him a check, and I don't even know if I told you this part, you know, that the pressure's on now. You know, now you've got, you know, this is April, I don't know, mid-April, late April. Now the pressure's on, you know, now the money's been sent, that first payment. And, you know, mind you, if I get to two or three payments, it was supposed to be four or five payments, I don't remember what it was. If I'd have got to the third payment, or second payment, and paid him all this money, I don't, you know, and it didn't work out, you know, he basically got to keep it. And that was, so the pressure was on, you know, so now, you know, I'm at the house, I'm getting.
Hey, Brennan, yep. Just a little backstory into this. Do you have to do anything, you know, you've never even been to Canada before?
No, and I'm fixing to tell you the horror story. you're fixing to get it. And it's, you know,
I didn't know if you had to have any kind of licensing or anything to be a guide there.
You have to have it. Well, in Alberta, I know Saskatchewan's, I'm guessing, is just about the same thing. But Alberta, what it is, they have zones. And like I own four zones, or it's actually called a WMU or allocation. So, and it just imagine this area. So if you looked at an aerial of Alberta, just zoomed out, there's a bunch of little squares and weird shapes, and they're numbered. And those numbers are what you can guide in. So like you can get as many as you want, but you can't buy them off the shelf. You have to find people to sell these licenses. Like, I don't think there's an allocation in Alberta that allows more than four outfitters in that zone. You can own all four licenses for that zone, but you're going to have to buy it from the individual that owns it. So, I bought four allocations, so I've got four areas. Now, these areas, I'm telling you, I've only ever hunted in two of mine, if that tells you how big they are. I mean, it would take me probably four and a half hours to get from my lodge to the other side of one of my zones. It's huge. And some of them are small, you know, some of them are small. And here's the deal. There's not a price on that license. That price is whatever you make it. I mean, I could have bought it for this a certain amount and sold it for $20,000 less, $2 less, $1 million. It's whatever you think that, you know, that zone's worth. I got four of them and I sent him the money. So you have to, let me back up. So you have to have, basically you have to be, it's called Alberta Professional Outfitter Society. You have to go through them and do, I mean, there's just a lot of little things that I didn't know. You know, you just can't type in on Google, you know, hey, I want to be a guide in Canada. You know what I mean? It's a lot more difficult than that. And boy, I learned the hard way. And it was, so, you know, I sent the money to him and now the pressure's on, and I'm calling contacts, everybody that's ever, hell, I think I, before you even knew who I was, I think I may even sent you a message, just trying to get everybody on my Facebook that probably hunts, that were friends with me at the time, got a message like, hey, look, you know, bring a group up and I'll help you out. Like, I just need to get it going. And I sat down and I put the paper, you know, pinned the paper and tried to figure out, you know, I don't know what things, you know, what, cause it's a different exchange rate up there. How does it all work? You know, how do you figure up your finances and all that? So, I started figuring up how many hunters I need. And I'm going to tell you what's crazy. And he's one of my biggest clients up there now. I'm not going to say his name on here because I don't want anybody trying to tell us. I don't think he'd go hunt with anybody else. But one of the guys I sent a message to, he has a lodge down by my hometown. And what's crazy is he was the first guy I sent him. Okay, let me back up. I needed 35 hunters to make it work to the first year, to get it paid off, to just make it work. I needed 35 hunters. First guy I sent a message to, he said, man, it was just, I mean, it was instant. Sent it to him. He replies, man, he said, you couldn't have hit it any better. He said, I've got 12, or me and 11 others, 12 of us, that's been hunting Saskatchewan for 5 or 6 years. Hell, it may even be longer than that. And he says, the guy's selling the place. We need a place to go. We're in. I'll send you a check for 12 people tomorrow. And my jaw hit the ground. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Is this how it's going to be? Is it going to be this easy? You know? And guy sent me a check, you know, the next day, and he's one of my biggest customers now. But, you know, see, it was, you know, then I'm like, all right, I got 12, you know. And then, you know, all these people, yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to get these people, blah, 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 and so on. We're coming. And I'm just sitting here waiting, and no deposits are rolling in. Then all the people that said, oh, I might be able to make it, those were the people that booked. I mean, it was weird. Like, every client, I wound up only running 33 that year. I was too short, but I figured two people, I can make that work. You know what I mean? So 33 people, and I made it work. I mean, it just all the people that came made it. They made it happen. I couldn't have did it with any less. I mean, every person that came, the reason I'm where I'm at today with the Alberta operation. And so they, you know, I booked 33 people, and you know, all summer I'm working in the plants. I think I wound up going to Louisiana and working for a couple months and 110 degrees and just sitting there just dreaming about it every day. Like, I can't wait to get there. But you know, all I hear is, you know, crossing the border ain't easy. Especially when you're, you know, trying to get work permits and stuff. I mean, it's It's not, you just don't drive through there and say, hey, I'm coming to work in your country. And that's, you know, here, you know, I've got these guide licenses. See ya. No, it's nothing like that. So, you know, all I can worry about is, you know, can I get across the border? And, you know, what, you just hear all these horror stories. People, you know, people getting turned away. Now I'm sitting there thinking, well, golly, you know, I've got to have these 33 clients to get me up there. You know, fuel, food, this, that, and the other, you know, insurance and all this. And what if I get up there and they turn me away? And I've got to try to pay all these people back, you know, the money. And, it, you know, how do you do it? Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have mom and dad that or grandpa that's helped them out. And, hey, that's great. But I didn't have help. I mean, it was literally just winging it. And I left. I went up leaving August. I don't know. Season didn't start till like August 8th. September 8th. I went up leaving like 2.5 weeks early just to make sure I could get up there. So, of course, when I did get up there finally, you know, I had a lot of time sitting around. But anyway, so, you know, I get up there and I get to, you know, we're going to cross in Montana. And I'm going to tell you what, that's when the really horror story started of getting across the border. I had, you know, I hired a consultant out of Edmonton and he totally just didn't know what he was doing. And it took me 3 days to get across the Canadian border. And I'm going to tell you what, in those 3 days, I bet I lost 10, 12 pounds of stress, literally driving back and forth. You need this. And then, you know, then I had one guy who was Captain Canada. When he came in there, he wasn't letting me through. Oh, you're hunting birds? Oh, yeah, nope, nope, yeah. No, that ain't going to work. You know, everything I said was just, hell, at one point, the guy that was with me, you know, he asked him a question. And as he's replying, he just says, shut your mouth. I'm done hearing you talk. I knew I wasn't getting across that day. He's just one of those guys. I mean, I'm sitting here every day like, golly, am I going to have to call 33 people back and tell them that, you know, don't sue me. I'm going to try to get your money here soon, you know. And anyways, it was a bad experience. I had a very bad experience my first year, but that was for me.
What was the holdup? I mean, what was some things that they did?
Well, when I got there, the first guy was going to let us cross. And when I say us, I had a guy working for me at the time. And we get there, and he was going to, when I gave him my packet, he goes, this is not right. And he says, you are applying for, and this is it. I got there, now mind you, I got there at 7:30 in the morning, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And he says, you've applied for a open work permit. And that basically what that is for me to go up there and work for anybody, like a McDonald's or a, you know, Costco or Sam's or something. And I was like, man, look, you know, can I just call my consultant? Because I'm trying to be, you know, as most respectful as I can. You know, those guys that can dang near do anything to you, and you just got to sit there and take it. And he was being nice. I mean, he wanted to just get me through. And so I called my consultant, and I'm like, hey, this ain't right. He's like, oh, it is right. They, you know, you've got to have open work. No, the guy's telling me what I need. You know, and here it is, black and white. This is what I need. So do your job. You know, I paid you this amount of money. Do your job. And it was just a real stressful morning of trying to get. And he just arguing with me. I'm like, look. So what? You know, there was two numbers I had to provide, you know, once you, I guess, get into the system of getting a work permit and all this stuff. Well, those numbers, I finally, you know, at noon, I get one of them from the consultant. And I'll remind you, from 7:30 till noon, you know, the guy just tells me, look, once you get your stuff, he said, I'll push you in front of the line, you know, and just come up here and wave at me, and I'll push you in front of everybody and get your work permit and go on. Now I've got one of these numbers. Now he's telling me I need all this stuff, you know, all this other stuff. This is my consultant telling me this. He says, hey, you need this. You need a business number. You need this, that, and the other. Well, I mean, now, I'm literally just sitting there just waiting. You know, I told my consultant what I needed, and now I'm just sitting there waiting like, you know, he's like, oh, I'll call you when I get it. You know, I'll get all this stuff together. So I'm just sitting there. Now we're getting on 3 o'clock. Now 4 o'clock, now 5 o'clock, 5:28. Remember looking at my phone went off, 5:28. No, I'm sorry. I got a text 528 from my consultant says, hey, this number that you need could take up a month to get. I'll be in touch. And I'm like, do what? Now, look, I'm about to drop my phone. I'm like, that can't work. I've got hunters showing up in 14 days. Like, that's not possible. Well, what happened was he was getting off at 5:30 in the afternoon. It's 5:28, and I couldn't get a hold of him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is not good. So now I'm at the border, you know, freaking out, you know, call my mom, call my dad, and just, like, don't know what to do. Then I get on their website, and I find another number on my consultant's website. I call it, and it's his boss. She answers, and I'm like, I said, look, this is what I need. This is what the guy that I've hired isn't giving me. I need this. I just drove 36 hours up here, and, you know, my livelihood is at stake. You know, I've got to have it. She goes, oh, you need that number? I'll give it to you. It's in the system. I don't know why he couldn't give it to you this morning. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So she, I mean, literally, and just me telling her that, she gets in there, takes not even a minute. She says, oh, you got a paper and pen? Gives me the number. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, how? So anyways, well, guess what happened at 5:30? Shift change at the border. And it was like the guy that wanted me to get across. It was like he grabbed his stuff, and as he's walking out, he gave me this look like the next guy that's coming in, you're not getting across. And I'm going to tell you what, this guy walks in there, bald-headed guy with a mean mugging look, and he just like, hey, what do you need? And, I mean, he was Captain Canada, brother. What do you want? What do you need? Oh, well, we don't deal with this stuff here. I'll look at it. You know, so we go and we sit there for 2 hours. And finally, he waves us up there, and we go up there and talk to him. He's like, oh, well, he went into the system and found every outfitter in Alberta and printed it off. There's a sheet online that shows every outfitter in the province of Alberta. And he's like, these are all the outfitters in Alberta. You know, why should you even be up here? Like, you know, what if you're taking jobs away from Canadians? And I'm just like, look, like, then I started trying to explain to him how it works. You know, look, I bought this license that was for sale. Like, it's not like, you know, I'm taking a job away from Canadian. And then what about your lodge? Well, my lodge, you know, I'm renting it for 2 months. Well, you're renting it for 2 months. Well, then a Canadian can't use it. So that, you know, that ain't going to work. Well, and I had like two cases of shotgun, and I have to show like where all my money's going up there, you know, what I'm going to spend and all this stuff and whatnot. And I had on there, I don't remember how much in shells, $3,000 or $4,000 in shells on my business plan. And he goes, what shows on your ammunition sheet, or, you know, when you brought your gun and you had a case of shells, 250 rounds in your truck? I was like, yes, sir. He goes, well, we can mark that off the list. I'm like, do you realize a case of shells is only going to, like, go so far? Like, I've got 33 people coming for 3 days each. Like, there's a case of shells will be gone in the morning. And it was on and on and on and on. And finally, he turned us around. He didn't deny the work permit. He just turned us around and said, look, until you can come back and prove that you're not taking jobs away from Canadians, he said, you're not getting across. So here we are, dropped 2 hours back to a hotel, nearest hotel, and then back up the next day. And they had a bunch of, you know, I guess refugees coming through, and they weren't letting us cross that day. Went back to the hotel, and I went the next morning with the same paperwork, and I was across in 2.5 hours. And I'm like, golly, you know, it was a bad experience. Just a lot of stress and not knowing if I was going to get up there and whatnot. So anyway, wow. So we get up there and, you know, I spend 2 weeks of burning the roads up. Hell, I put 24,000 miles in my pickup and 58 days of being up there. And it was just trying to learn the country. And
so yeah. Brennan, it doesn't work like America. It as far as you don't lease property from a landowner.
You can't pay a landowner up there. You can't bribe him. You can't. They just have to let you hunt, and they don't. I mean, Saskatchewan, you can go there, and if they don't have private property, you know, basically, if the land's not posted, you can go hunt. With or without permission. It's not like that in Alberta. Alberta, you have to have permission. And you can't
have any problem. And they try to set people up all the time, Canadians and Americans, to see if any money is exchanging in all this, right?
Oh yeah. And I've had some farmers ask me, and I just won't do it. It's not, I've had a farmer, hey, bring me a, thing of crown, and yeah, I want to hunt your property, and I'd love to give you a crown. I'd love to give you money. I'd love to do whatever I need to do to be able to hunt your property. But at the end of the day, it's not worth my livelihood. It's not. I'm just not gonna do it. So, and there, I've been asked a few times, but it's not it's not an everyday thing. Most people up there, they either gonna let you or they're not. There's some people that tell you get the hell off the property, and some people tell you, hey, come on, So.
What's the percentages like there for you as an outfitter?
I don't want to say. I get on a lot of stuff. I don't know. We've got to get.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've seen pictures and video of. Of some of the guys that you rent from. I mean, you seem like you have really good relationships with them, or not rent. Yeah. That's a bad word. Because you don't rent, but people that you hunt on.
Yeah, oh yeah, I've got a lot of good relationships with people up there. I mean, I've got guys I keep in contact with all throughout the year, just friends. I mean, they really turned into friends. There's a lot of landowners that just, you just can't help but like them. And we're established there. We donate meat to the food bank, and, we spend a lot of money there in local businesses. And, there's a lot of people that like us, and I know there's got to be some that don't, because, you're going into another country, and then especially when you start beating locals to a field. We do this every day, day in and day out. On our off days, we're scouting, daylight till dark. I mean, it's literally a grind, daylight till dark, day in and day out. So you start beating these locals to fields, and, you can only hunt it on the weakest. That puts a bad taste in their mouth. But, hey, I tell them, hey, look, just jump in the blind with us. Just come hunting. It's not worth it to me. I've got a lot of locals that'll hunt with me. I'll tell my clients, well, look, they're gonna hunt with us just because the fact that this is their land, we've got to respect it, or not so much their land, but they've been hunting here for 25, 30 years, and I'm an outsider, only been here for 2 years, so why not let them hunt and become friends and just kind of, I scratch your back, you scratch mine, kind of deal. Look, I'm not trying to intrude on nothing. I'm not trying to. It's not that I want people to like me, but by God, the last thing you want to do is go up there and start pissing off the locals. So the last thing you want to do is piss off locals and farmers, start rutting up fields and all that. You don't want to go down that. That'll shut you down. I mean, it really will.
But what was it like being the new kid on the block? First time you start visiting with people about hunting?
New kid on the block, I don't know. It's not a sales pitch when you go to them, but, some people, it's just like, it's awkward, especially for Canadians. Some Canadians are just open the door, like, they don't even say, like, hi, I'm like, hi, I'm Brennan, Hudson, sitting down, up from, where my lodge is at, blah, 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 and give them a little speech, and they're like, yeah, go ahead, and shut the door. And it's like, oh, okay, thanks for shaking my hand. Thanks for saying, I was just going to tell you thank you. No, and new kid on the block. There's another outfitter in the area, and he's never had any competition. So I'm sure, I know I was a big thorn in his side for the first year.
What you're saying is Letterkenny is pretty accurate. Have you ever seen those videos?
No, I haven't.
You gotta look up Letterkenny. It's a group of Canadians that make videos on and put them on social media. Just look it up after we get off the podcast.
Okay.
You'll say, yeah, "Oh man, that's just like Canada."
Oh yeah. So, that first year was tough in a lot of ways. I had a lot of clients come up, didn't know what to expect. I hit a home run with my lodge and the owners there. They're like my grandparents in camp. They're like my Canadian grandparents. We're great friends. And we spent a lot, even during off season, hell, I went up and seen them in February, and me and Mr. Peter, we hunt together, we'll go up in November, and we just got to, they're like the, I don't even know how to explain it. That lodge was probably the biggest blessing to my life and up there as an outfitter, because they took us in. It wasn't just, hey, this is the lodge, cook you a meal, cook your guys' meals, and, get out, pay me money kind of deal. They literally, when I walked in, and you know, and they'll tell you they didn't know who I was. I called them up one day and told them that, you know, hey, I was going to fill their lodge, and they thought I was crazy because 1,000 other people told them that. And when I walked in, they were like, oh, we were kind of expecting a 40-year-old man. And it just, they, I'm telling you what, they opened their arms and took us in. And that, the lodge, I mean, it just, the owner, he's a phenomenal chef, and I'm sure you've heard from Ramsey, but it's just a, golly, biggest blessing. It was, I mean, on our days off, you know, we're over there sleeping on the couch, and she's baking cookies for us, and, you know, just a great, everything worked that year. It really did. You know, I didn't have a lot of hunters. It was days, I had 4 or 5 days in between groups, so I was, you know, just staying on the road and learning the country, and, you know, just trying to get to that first year to make it work. And I'm telling you, I ran 33 clients that year, which don't sound like a lot, you know, but you got to mind, you know, you remind you that, you know, they come in, they stay for 3 days. And so we get to that first year, and I went up.
Let me ask you this. What did you find out about the hunting? What was different about hunting up there versus what you were used to?
You know, I had never been up there. And my first hunt was amazing. But the area I'm in isn't like I've heard other parts of Canada is. It's a lot harder. But I grew up on the Gulf Coast, you know, just southeast Texas, and I love shooting speckle bellies. That is my one bird. If I can hunt the rest of my life, that's what I do, right there, specks. And it just so happens that the area I'm in is the heart of speckle belly. I mean, it's just, it is unbelievable. You can kill 5 a person there, and you know, per gun. And so when the hunting there compared to down here, I'd say it wasn't as easy as I thought it'd be as far as finding birds. You know, I'm thinking Canada, oh man, it's like a fire hose. You know, the main part of the fire hose runs through Canada. When it gets to Montana, if you ever kicked on a fire hose and you just watch the end of it, you know, run back and forth, and that's what it does into the States. But they got to come through here. This is going to be awesome. And I'm going to tell you, though, that first year, I got to tell you this, that first year I was there, it was extremely dry. Roosts were almost dried up. And I'll tell you, my last week there, they had a wildfire that almost burnt down the lodge. And it, I mean, literally burnt thousands and thousands. The scariest thing I've ever been in my life was in the middle of a wildfire. Well, not a wildfire, the telephone pole broke and caught, you know, caught the ground on fire, and it took off. But anyways, the hunting there, it's great but you've got to know how to scout. Golly, that is the biggest challenge to my operation is scouting. I mean, day in and day out, you've got to stay on them. There, you know, this year we took one day off, and I felt like I was lost the next day. I guess it's just like, you know, guiding fishing trips. You got to stay on fish. You've got to stay on these birds because they move. Even with a 10-mile, you know, if they're, you know, one area up north, they may move 10 miles to the south. You know, certain little areas. I mean, that area I'm in is a lot of pasture, and they got little bitty grain fields in a lot of little areas. And you've just got to stay on them. I mean, it's extremely hard to stay on birds there. I will say that to where I'm at. It's not like people think, oh, it's Canada. Like I said, the fire hose effect, like there's just going to be birds in every field. And that's what I was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is going to be awesome. No, it's the hunting. I mean, they're, you know, some birds have eggshells hanging off their back when you shoot them dang near. I mean, it's all joking aside, you know, it's pretty daggum easy, but there are hard days. You know, if you're going to book a trip in Canada, know that there are outfitters that have bad days up there. And when I say bad days, I've never had a zero or nothing, but I'm going to tell you right now, I know other outfitters and myself, you may have a hunt where you shoot 15, 20 birds. It is hunting, and you never, weather up there controls everything. That's why you're getting your birds in the south. When, you know, you get snowfall up there or a hard north wind, you better be getting ready, but birds can be leaving. So, you know, they've got to come, they've got to go south. So, you know, across the board, I'd say scouting is your biggest thing up there. If you're going to go up there and freelance, you better have some time. You better have some time put behind the steering wheel. So.
Well, you learned a lot that first year. So I'm saving there's a lot more to this story that's coming next week. Couple of big things happened. over the next year or two.
You know, I would say, you know, what you're not gonna, or what's gonna be on next week's episode. You know, I will say this: if you're an out, you know, the people that don't see an outfitter's life. I'm trying to think how to say this, Rocky. There's a lot of things behind the door that it's not just wake up and go out for 4 hours and shoot birds and go back and take a nap and go back out in the morning. You don't see the amount of stress that goes into things breaking, and getting in wrecks and so on. It's there's a lot of things behind the scenes that, I mean, just about kill us, literally. So, I don't know. I'm excited to tell that story as well. That's the whole second year deal.
If you think this is the end of the story, boy, you're in for it next week.
So people think it's, like I said, it's all roses and just they. You know, that's another thing, Rocky. People see, they're so used to seeing pile pictures on Facebook every day. It's like turkeys right now. You know, yeah, I post pictures of turkeys every day. People just think, oh my gosh, he's killing it. He's killing it, killing birds every day. God just makes it look easy. I'm going to tell you, no, you don't. It's not the shooting part. It's everything else. It's not as easy as it looks. It's really not. And I'm not saying on my behalf, but there's a lot of outfitters out there that go through a lot of stuff that people don't see. They just see, you know, them bringing in money and people take them hunting, but that's not it. And I know you've outfitted for a while or got it, I believe, and I know you know how it is. So,
it's a fun life. It is a life that will wear your body down quickly.
I'm telling you, I'm ready to go home. I've been gone since August, staying there. So in and out, I've been home a few times. But this, it's not an easy life for sure.
Well, Brennan, thank you for tonight. I'm looking forward to next week. And listen, like I said, if you think this is the end of the story, Paul Harvey's coming, and his name is Brennan Hudson in part 3 next week with the rest of the story. So, Brennan, thank you again. Really enjoyed it. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.